Hey y'all, welcome back to another episode of Bed Talks. Man, when Kay first played that song with me, because we always kind of played the song before the show to kind of just, you know, fill it
test
out.
Run.
A little test run. I was like, is that a Sinead O'Connor song? And he's like, nope. So anyway, that being said, we are excited to be back with you guys again. We have a special guest who has been on our show before, Dr. Evi Lav. So we're so excited to have you back. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back.
Yeah. Can you tell people who might be listening for the first time a little bit about what you do and your background as a therapist?
Sure. Yeah. I have a group practice in the Bay Area in San Francisco and Oakland. It's the Bay Area CBT Center, and we do cognitive behavioral therapy and evidence-based treatments. So our website is bayareacbtcenter.com. And now I've also founded CBT Online, which is for the purpose, now that everything has gone remote, I'm trying to make therapy more accessible for people, and also cognitive behavioral therapy tools. So if you go to CBT Online, we are offering a lot of worksheets that people can fill out online on their computers or their phones, and audio, mindfulness audio, and videos, quick tips on communication skills and dealing with anxiety or uncertainty, especially with everything that's happening right now. It's really important, I think, to have mental health resources more available for people at this crazy time.
Yeah, thank you for like providing mental health resources, because I think we need them anyway in normal day-to-day life. But now during these times of COVID, the pandemic, economic challenges, racial challenges, I just think we really, really, you know, people are probably even more so reaching out for your type of services. So it's great to see that you developed and adopted to provide some of these resources online. We appreciate that.
Absolutely. I really agree with you that, you know, even in normal circumstances, normalizing, you know, our need for mental health is really important, just like physical health or any other health, right? Mm-hmm. That we need to be taking care of our minds, you know, and our emotions. And that's not something that society really teaches us. So it's important to make that normal and not to pathologize it. Also, I find that right now we're at a time where large corporations and tech companies are taking over the mental health field. And we have to be really careful. Well, we don't want to be seeing a psychologist that's not credentialed appropriately. We want to make sure that it's very important to find a therapist that is a good fit for you and a good match and has the right background and education and credentials. And so I think it's important to not let the big tech companies take over the field.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of like going to see a physician. If you have a need around orthopedics, you wouldn't necessarily go to a primary care physician. You would go to an orthopedic surgeon, right, to assess your needs. And I think therapy is very similar in that you want to make sure you match with the right person who is not only credentialed, but who has the background of experience, right, and evidence-based experience of being able to solve through the challenges that you face. So I think sometimes we don't think on that level. And I've heard things from people where they said, I'm not getting any results. I'm not getting to where I need to. I think it's a waste of time. And I always, you know, push back on that. And I tell people, you might not be partnered with the right therapist. That's very possible, right? Or are you doing the things that the therapist is suggesting? So it can go both ways. But to your point, just being very intentional about linking with someone who understands your challenges and who has experiences in dealing with it. So I kind of want to shift a little bit. I know that COVID is kind of back in our face again. it slowed down for a little bit, but the world had to open up. And so, you know, with couples, I know you do a lot of couples therapy. What are some of like the things you're seeing that are kind of the top issues right now with people in their relationships as it relates to COVID?
Yeah, I think that certainly this shift in the structure of our lives related to the social distancing and quarantining has brought up a lot of new issues for couples. Your daily life has changed. People that used to be going to work for 8 or 9 hours a day are now spending, right, the entire day in the same vicinity. And so there's a lot of issues that are coming up with that related to sharing housework tasks fairly and having alone time, making alone time, and how to spend time with friends and how to, right, like, negotiate certain areas, right? And that we used to have a home that we could just leave at any time, but now every area of the house needs to be negotiated. Where are people working? Or if you have kids, where are they working, right? How do we separate that from, if we have two parents that are working, then they're, you know, all in one home, it makes things very complicated. I would say that right now, the number one issue that I see with couples is around the social distancing, right? You may have one partner that is, maybe they have a certain vulnerability and are more susceptible to COVID, right? Or has like a pre-diagnosis of some sort that makes them more susceptible, and the other partner is not as worried about it and they are in a different mode. They want to maybe travel more or go out more, and the other person wants to really socially distance and be very strict about it. And now there's this new thing that needs to be negotiated.
Yeah. So how do you like work with couples to kind of help them negotiate for things? Because I mean, I would think like there's challenges around, first we have the challenge of just being in the same space, right? And coping with that person more than we normally would have to cope with them, because you would have your outlets of going, like you said, to work or going out with your friends. You'd have other things you could do to break up that time. But now it's like, okay, I'm free, sort of, but yet COVID does still exist. There are people, more and more people getting it. So I could see that in a relationship where one person might be a little more cautious, and someone who might be more socially outgoing is really, really wanting to connect with their friends, family, so forth. So how does a couple like work through that? What do you suggest?
And do they need to draw up a contract?
I am a big fan of contracts in general. It's good to have things in writing. You can't go wrong with that. You know, I'm a big fan of nonviolent communication. I have a lot of nonviolent communication worksheets on cbtonline.com. And also, if you look up nonviolent communication and go to their website, you could find a lot of amazing tools. But what I find really awesome about nonviolent communication is that it's like a language. It's a new language that you learn. And it's a language that teaches you how to get to win-win scenarios. I think when we think about our politics and the things that are happening in the world and the polarization that we're in and the hierarchies that have been built, we as a country have gotten used to the idea of negotiations being a zero-sum game, that one person wins and another person loses. And the more that you learn nonviolent communication and you understand the philosophy behind it, it's really a language that helps you reach win-win scenarios. And the ways that it helps you do that is because it helps you negotiate while identifying underlying needs. And underlying needs are more general than a want. So for example, if you're knowing what the underlying need is behind a certain want of mine or a request of mine, when we're able to identify the underlying need, we're more able to negotiate a want that is fair to both people, right? For example, if I want a hug, I could get really stuck in the idea, like, I want a hug, and my partner's like, I don't want a hug right now, or I want a massage, and my partner's like, I don't want to give you a massage. But if I'm able to identify it's affection that I'm needing, I need affection or physical touch, then there's this space to negotiate it, right? We could go, do you want a hug, or do you want to kiss, or do you want to hold hands, or, right, do we want to, you know, play thumb wars. I mean, there's a lot of ways to meet the need for affection as opposed to get the want met, right? Get whatever we want.
So it's thinking more globally, right, about that want to get that need met, but also is being flexible to how it's received and not just get stuck in one way. Is that what you're saying, or is it deeper than that?
So I think that we have to be really flexible with our wants, but our underlying needs are non-negotiable, right? Mm-hmm. So if my partner doesn't want to give me a hug today, that doesn't necessarily, that's not a red flag. But if I'm not getting the level of affection that I'm needing in a relationship, then that might not be workable for me. So being able to identify what are your most important underlying needs, how do you stay very rigid with your underlying needs? Like maybe you have a need for consistency, reliability, safety, honesty, affection, trust. Underlying needs are non-negotiable, but there's many, many ways to get a need met. And so you want to be really flexible with what you want, but stay very firm with what you're needing.
So say someone is like very opposed to being affectionate, but they're satisfying your other needs, but you do have this need for affection. How do you coach a couple around that? Because you know how some people just have different love languages, or some people, they will say, I'm very affectionate, but then some people say, I'm not comfortable being affectionate. So I know you're negotiating, but I'm just curious, like if someone is pretty dead set on one side of the table saying, look, I don't really desire to be affectionate in that way. I'm here, I'm steady, I'm a good provider, you know, I love this person, I've been in this relationship with them, committed. How do you like get them to negotiate for their underlying needs? Or do you tell that person that they may not be able to get that in that relationship, even if they're getting the other aspects of it, what they need from them?
Well, I always say that we start with the notion that underlying needs are equally valid. Meaning if one person has a need for space and the other person has a need for affection in that moment, they're equally valid. And then we negotiate something that meets both people's needs. Like one person can, like, why don't we take, you know, 2 hours to be on our own and then come back and, you know, watch a movie and cuddle for half an hour. So you negotiate it. But the way that I help couples think about it is that when you're negotiating, there's a healthy difference between compromising and sacrificing. So if me and you are negotiating our underlying needs, it may be that I don't have my ideal situation and you don't get your ideal situation, but neither one of us falls into an intolerable situation. And so that becomes, it's a very tricky thing to maneuver, but I can help couples maneuver that by, it's a long process, looking at their values, looking at their needs, thinking about what is their ideal and what is intolerable. But the main notion is that we have to be really clear about the difference between what does it look like to not get our ideal versus what does it look like when I fall into an intolerable situation over and over again in relation to a need of mine that is non-negotiable.
Because I have to add something to that, Dr. Abby. You know, when you talk about needs, you know, how do you, for males and female, you know, there are people who are very needy, okay? And I understand the context of, you know, negotiating wants and needs, but how would the approach be with someone who is extremely needy? In other words, you may have a couple of needs, but the needy person has like 10, 20 needs. How do you find that balance?
So I'll play with this. I think what's going to be helpful is to come up with a very specific example, and then we could go through it, because I would say that I actually don't believe in the term needy, meaning there's no way that one person is needier, because there's always another need. Like if I need a hug, that person not wanting to give me a hug, it's not that they don't have a need. They have a need for solitude, or they have a need for space. So it's not that the person that's making the request actually has more needs. I don't think about it that way. I think actually, I don't think that there are people that are needy. I don't think that there are people that have more needs or less needs. I see it as there are people that are more effective in describing and negotiating and kind of requesting their needs in a way that is...
it comes off...
Needy. Right. Exactly.
Sounds like more verbal. Individuals that are really more verbal about their needs that they want met, compared to someone who may not be as verbal about his or her needs that they are also looking to be met.
Right. Well, let's think about a specific example. Like this is an example, because the person who's not making a request for a need, it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't have a need, right? like the person who asks somebody to do the dishes and the person's like, I don't want to do the dishes. That person also has a need, right? They have a need to, right, be calm, or, right, like be in solitude or relax, right? They still have a need, right? So I don't think that one person is more needy necessarily, but I think that when you're not effective at describing or expressing your needs, you then start growing resentful and feeling helpless, and then kind of, right, either holding in all of your needs and then throwing out like a lot of them at once, right? Mm-hmm. Or getting angry, you know, so it's often the person that is described as quote unquote needy. The way I usually experience it is that it's a person that is not expressing their needs often enough and ends up feeling really deprived, and then they don't know how to handle their deprivation, and then they end up kind of asking for many, many needs at once.
So it's like a buildup. Yeah, that makes sense. They're suppressing, and then it's just like, whew, it comes out in droves, right? Which could make them appear to be needy, but they're really just, it could be that they've suppressed or held back some of those things. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm saying that in any moment of conflict where two people want different things, there's always two underlying needs. Mm-hmm. You know?
And then I want to go back to the social distancing. So what are the techniques that you give a couple? So say you have one part of the couple that really wants to get out, do things, because that's just their nature. And they're kind of like, hey, I'm protecting myself as much as I can, but I'm going to keep living, right? And then say you have one that's a little more conservative about being out and about. What's a win-win strategy in that situation, especially if the couple is maybe sharing the same living arrangement? How would you like counsel them through that?
Yeah, well, I would continue to use the same protocol that we just chatted about, which is the idea of using the nonviolent communication, which is saying the fact, saying an observation, like when this happens, I feel, and then I need, and then would you be willing? And the thing is that when we're thinking about underlying needs, we're always checking in to see if we have a willing participant. Because if the other person is not a willing participant in meeting our need, then we're responsible for meeting our own needs. Hmm. So for example, let's imagine that one partner does not want to take a flight to New York, and one partner wants to take a flight to New York to see their family, right? They have different wants, and then we could kind of go into their underlying needs, and we might find that one person has a need for safety and the other person maybe has a need for maybe connection, right? Like connection with people they haven't seen in a while, right? Connecting with their family. And now we know the underlying needs, that one person has a need for safety and the other person has a need for connection. And we help them negotiate that in a way where it may be that neither person gets their ideal, but neither one falls into an intolerable situation. So we ask them, well, what is your ideal situation? And the person, let's say that wants connection, goes, my ideal situation is I take a flight to New York, I stay with my family for a week. Well, my ideal situation is we both take a flight to New York and we spend time with my family and we were there for 2 weeks and we come back. And the other person's ideal is, it's my ideal that we don't leave the house ever. That's my ideal, right? So one person's ideal is to go to New York and the other person's ideal is to not leave the house at all for 2 weeks. And then we ask, well, what is intolerable for you? And one person, maybe the person that needs connection, may say, well, it's completely intolerable for me not to see my family at all. And the other person would go, well, it's completely intolerable for me to be on a plane, right? So it's like the more that we get into that information, the more it opens up the space to be able to find a resolution that isn't ideal. It doesn't meet each one's ideal, but the most important thing is you don't want your partner to be in an intolerable situation. You want to be open and flexible and willing enough to make sure that you're negotiating something that doesn't make one person feel like they're in an intolerable situation and not getting the connection that they need, or that they are in an intolerable situation and not getting the safety that they need. So then you start brainstorming ideas. And in this process, you're just writing down all of the ideas that are possible. So you might write down something like, I go to New York and I stay here. We take a flight to New York, we take a COVID test, and then we quarantine for a week, and then we see family, or then you just see family, and then you take a COVID test. Or it could be, I go to New York without you, I stay here, and then you go for a week, and then you quarantine for 2 weeks when you get back in a hotel room, right? Like, you just brainstorm as many options as possible, and you start crossing out the things that are intolerable until you get to the few that are left over. And, you know, the more that you do this with openness and creativity, I find in all of my negotiations with many, many couples that you can always find a win-win scenario where, and that means that that both partners compromised, and maybe neither got their ideal, but neither one of them is in an intolerable situation. And it's usually a very creative solution, And it may end up something like, you know, the person goes to New York for a week, and then the person comes back, and then they stay in a hotel and they get a COVID test. And once they get the results, they come back home. Right.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a couple of things I want to touch on too. You talked about nonviolence techniques, right? So, you know, it is very easy for couples when they have, you know, really strong positions on things, for things to escalate pretty quickly. What are some of the tactics that you suggest for couples in those situations to help them kind of navigate through that?
What I find is that actually validating the person's underlying feelings and needs is the most powerful thing that we have, right? Because very frequently, when we're not getting what we want, it's not that it's painful that we're not getting what we want. I mean, it sucks not to get what you want, right? Mm-hmm. But what's really painful is not having our experience be validated, right? Like, the person that wants to go to New York to see their family, they want that. But what they're needing is for their partner to be able to say something like, you're feeling really isolated and you're feeling really lonely and you have a deep need for connection and it's really important for you to see your family, and that makes sense that that matters to you, right? Like, I think that what happens for couples, that all of us, right, we start feeling like if we validate the other person's experience, if we validate their underlying feelings and needs, we're saying that they're right, or we have to give them what they want. And in reality, we could validate very different, right, experiences from our own without necessarily saying you're right and I'm wrong, or you're right, so I have to do what you want, right? We could, the person who wants connection, needs connection and wants to go home, and the person that needs safety and wants to stay at home, if both of those people would be able to validate each other's experiences before going into the problem solving. So I always make sure that couples are validating the underlying feelings and needs before doing any problem solving. I think that having that as a rule makes negotiations so much easier, because when two people feel heard and their experiences are made to be valid, and we say, that makes sense, of course you feel this way, and I understand you have this need, and I want you to get this need met. When two people are able to do that, then negotiating the wants becomes much smoother, much easier.
It's so funny that you say this, because there's a guy, Chris Voss, who's a former FBI hostage negotiator. He talks a lot about this and how he would communicate to get people who held people hostage to turn over the hostages and to relinquish, right, to the FBI. And a lot of it was validating, ironically, their feelings and their needs, like figuring out what they wanted, figuring out what was important, but also kind of just empathy. And it didn't mean you agreed with what they were doing, right? Because they were breaking the law easily. But by him validating a lot of these needs, even in people who were criminals, right, in these scenarios, he was able to get them to do the right thing many times over. And so I think it's interesting. I think we use this technique a lot in probably our careers, right? When we work with our team and teams to get things done or to get things accomplished, or when we're negotiating to buy a car or, you know, a house or whatever. But it is interesting in relationships. I don't think we always see it from that spectrum. So that's a pretty good way to look at it.
Absolutely. I think that that your example is a very accurate one, because you see, as soon as you are really able to empathize and put yourself in the other person's shoes, and again, it's not about understanding or validating what they want, right? It's about validating the experience, which is always the feelings and the needs, because under any negative feeling, there is an unmet need. So your negative feelings are giving you information about the needs, right? If I say, for example, if I feel lonely, I have a need for connection, right? If I feel hurt, maybe I have a need for support, right? But and also our criticisms are giving us information about our needs and our feelings. If I say, you don't care about me, I need care, I need love, or I need empathy. And so when we learn nonviolent communication, we can start responding more to the person's experience rather than the content, right? Mm-hmm. Because it's so interesting that you brought up this hostage situation, because, you know, the nonviolent communication, these are certain tools that are helpful in any domain, with work or with hostages, right? Or with people we love, but the place where it's hardest to do is for couples.
Absolutely. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like how a friend could tell you something that maybe your significant other told you, right? Or your parent, or someone who's has a close relationship, a sibling even, how you could receive it a lot differently, because there's almost that extra layer there. But when someone is close to you, unfortunately, sometimes we're more, what's the word, closed off to what they're saying, right? It doesn't resonate the same way. So,
right.
Yeah, so I just thought that was pretty interesting. And then the last thing, I know we're getting ready to wrap up soon, is you talked about contracts and the fact that you kind of like contracts, not a legal contract, but it sounds like you see power in people kind of writing things down to accomplish certain goals as a couple or to work towards certain things. So I was curious for you to kind of delve deeper into that and by what you mean by that.
Yeah, I think that the more that we write things down, there's less space for I don't remember, or I didn't know, or that's not how what we said, or that's not how, right? It just keeps things very clear. I think the best example of a contract is making a timeout contract. I think that all couples need a really good system for taking space. You know, like nobody, if you're triggered at like a 9 out of 10, like 10 being the highest, nobody could be effective at that time. And for couples to try to stay together during that time is just not helpful. We have to be able to recognize when we are no longer effective and just take that space. And if people are not taking the space in a way that works for the other person, it ends up being so hurtful and chaotic, and the person leaves and you don't know when they're coming back and you feel abandoned. Whereas in reality, if you have a timeout contract, then, you know, you come up with a system where you have a word and what people say when they need space. And it's usually a we word, like we need space, or, you know, I'm triggered, or, why don't we take a timeout? Like it's a non-blaming.
Right, it's like a safe
word. Right.
Yeah.
Like right. It's a mm-hmm. Go ahead. Right. It's a safe word, and it's non-blaming. It's not like you're being a jerk or you're scary or you're bad. Right. It's taking ownership that I need space, or we need space, or I'm triggered, or you know, we're not being effective right now. So it's a non-blaming language for just taking some space, and then you actually take physical space from each other, and you know what time the both of you get back to each other, and you actually do the nonviolent communication formula while you are on the timeout. And so there it gets more specific, and I have it on the website if people are interested to see what a timeout contract looks like. You could find it at BayAreaCBTCenter.com, but it really helps the relationship so much when you can just take a time out from your partner, and it doesn't have to be personal or bad. It's just a healthy thing to do in relationships.
So I have to admit, even though I do relationship coaching, that Kay is actually much better at that than me. So like, if there's something that, to your point, where it's like, okay, we're reaching this point that this isn't really productive communication,
right,
at this point, he's like, let's take a break from it. And that's what we do. We'll take a break from it, or time out. and then we'll come back at another time. And I found like it's been a good technique that he does with me, because I found that it does actually help you to have a better conversation when you're like more calm, you know, and you have time to kind of like refocus your energy.
Right.
So I think it's a really good thing for couples to practice, because I think the challenges with couples is sometimes you have one person, I'm very analytical, so I want to explain and I kind of want to give you more reasons.
Right.
I find like, you know, it's good for couples to, sometimes you have couples where one wants to just talk it through, but sometimes it just reaches a impasse, right? Where you need that like space away from that topic because you're not getting to a productive solution. So.
Yeah. Well, I find that when a partner has a hard time with a timeout, it's usually because of one of two reasons. Either one, you're not defining the exact time that you'll come back to it,
mm-hmm.
or you're not coming back to the issue at hand. So what's really important about the timeout contract is that A, you do agree on a time that you were going to come back. So you say, for example, in an hour, every time we take a timeout, within an hour, we come back. So as soon as the other, because often the partners that have difficulties with the timeout, it's because they don't know when the situation will be resolved. And then that makes them more anxious.
Yes, it makes sense.
Right. And a timeout is not supposed to function to avoid the problem, right? So if people are just going timeout and then they never talk about it and they go timeout and then they,
yeah.
Right. Then it doesn't work. That's not a timeout. That's just going, that's just stonewalling. Right.
And I'm like, Kay, say something because he was going to add something. I think like when you like kind of just take that time, but you come back to it, that you just, it just seems like you saw through it a lot better. Cause I've been on both sides of it where you have people that just want to like, you know, continue to feed that fire. And it usually,
absolutely.
Yeah. That's not a great communication tool to resolve conflict, but we're going to pick it.
Well, no, just kind of piggybacking off of what Dr. Ivy has said, and even what you've said, to kind of sum this dialogue up, you know, there's an old saying that, you know, things happen out of things happening. And, you know, by us learning by doing, these things are incorporated not only in our relational dynamics, but even just dealing with relationships abroad, whether mm-hmm. Co-worker relationships, friendship, family relationships. And, you know, I just think that it may sound elementary, but, you know, when things happen out of things that are happening, you know, that pretty much sets the precedence as to what you should expect one from another. So just wanted to piggyback off of that.
Yeah, I work with schemas, and schemas are core beliefs. I also have a schema questionnaire on the website, but I say a similar thing to what you're saying, which is, you know, our core beliefs that get triggered in our relationships get triggered within all domains, right? Like if I have a self-sacrifice schema and I feel guilty saying no and I have difficulty saying no, I'm going to have a hard time saying no to my partner. I'm going to have a hard time saying no to my boss. I'm going to have a hard time saying no to my friends. It's not like our core beliefs only get triggered in a particular relationship. Yeah. We bring our core beliefs with us into all of our relationships. So the more that we understand those core beliefs, that we understand our behaviors, how we behave when we're triggered and our urges and those negative thoughts that pull us into older behaviors, the more, and our values and what we want to be about, then we could really, when we do a new behavior in one relationship, we could start doing it in kind of all of them, right?
Right.
Yep. As always, you are so informative, and just, you know, you give us a different way or a different lens of looking at our relationships. You gave us some good COVID techniques today, which I think people will really appreciate, because I think that struggle is very real between some couples or people that are in relationships. And just, you know, why don't you tell people again how to find you, if there's anything that you're working on project-wise that you want people to be aware of.
Well, if anybody is curious about kind of core beliefs and relationships, you could go to BayAreaCBTCenter.com, and we have a schema questionnaire, and that will tell you kind of what core beliefs you have in relationships and what people you tend to be attracted to, because we often have a type that we go towards, which is correlated to our own core beliefs. And then on cbtonline.com, I've been making a lot of worksheets for people to be able to use nonviolent communication and mindfulness audio and ways to learn about, because I see mindfulness as not just a tool just to use to calm down or to feel differently. Mindfulness is a tool that helps us understand our behaviors and creates some space for us to have more intention, bring intention to how we want to act in our lives and in our relationships. So those are some of the things that I'm working on that I hope people will find to be helpful in their relationships.
Yeah, I agree with you about the mindfulness, that is really being intentional about things. And when you can learn to discipline yourselves in these different ways, it ties across your entire life, right? So we appreciate you coming on again and talking about these topics with us today. And again, Dr. Abby Lev, you can find her on her website. Again, can you just repeat it once more for our listeners?
BayAreaCBTCenter.com, yes. Or also there's a CBTOnline.com.
Okay, perfect. So we're going to sign off with that. Thank you again for coming on. And thank you guys for coming back to listen to another episode of Bed Talks. Please don't forget to subscribe to our future podcasts on the Anchor app, iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Until next time, XOXO.